Thank you for joining us today to discuss the release of the Lower Susquehanna River Watershed Assessment Draft Report. The draft report will go live online tomorrow, November 13th, and can be found at the shortened link http://bit.ly/LSRWA. The intent of this assessment was to analyze the movement of sediment and associated nutrient loads and impacts within the Lower Susquehanna River watershed to the Upper Chesapeake Bay. The report includes consideration of strategies for sediment management and recommendations for future opportunities. The draft assessment is now open for a comment period closing January 9th. In a few moments, Bruce Michael, Resource Assessment Service Director with the Maryland Department of Natural Resources and LSRWA Study Team Maryland State Representative, will give an overview of the study, followed by a more detailed discussion of the assessment and major findings by Anna Compton, biologist and LSRWA study manager with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Then I will turn the call back over to Bruce to discuss some of the recommendations in the report and the path forward. Also available on the call today to answer questions during the Q&A portion are Matthew Rowe, Deputy Director of Science Services Administration with the Maryland Department of the Environment, Rich Batuk, Associate Director for Science Analysis and Implementation with the Chesapeake Bay Program Office, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, Mark Breyer, Chesapeake Bay Program Director with the Nature Conservancy. First, if I can have a roll call for those of you who have joined us today. Please state your name and affiliation. If you have not done so already, please send an email to sarah.d.gross@usace.army.mil. During or immediately following the call, and I will send you an embargoed press release. The report and all associated materials are embargoed until 11 a.m. November 13th. Can I please have a roll call for those who have joined us today? If the moderator can please unmute the line.
This is Joel McCord at WYPR in Baltimore.
Jonathan Wilson at WAMU in Washington.
Pat Ferguson from Capital Gazette in Annapolis.
Danny Thompson, Capital News Service in Annapolis.
Phil Davis, Daily Times in Salisbury.
Carl Blankenship, Bay Journal.
Yeah. Josh Bollinger, the Star Democrat in Easton.
Daryl Fears, Washington Post.
Okay, thank you. If I can have the moderator please mute the lines again. In addition, a public meeting and webinar will be held December 9th at Hartford Community College in Bel Air, Maryland from 7 to 9 p.m. We have about 1 hour for this call, which will entail a question and answer period at the end. The purpose of this call is to inform reporters and to meet their needs. We ask that organizational representatives not ask questions or make comments during this call. We will be happy to answer any of your organization's questions after the media call, or you can present your questions at the public meeting. For the media, please keep questions within the subject area noted. Please state your name and affiliation prior to asking a question so we can ensure you receive any follow-up information we may provide. Please ask only one question and one follow-up question. Time permitting, you may ask another question once all media wishing to ask a question have done so. This call will be recorded. Please have your phones on mute until it is time to ask a question. Now I will turn the call over to Bruce Michael from the Maryland Department of Natural Resources.
Good morning. Studies in the past have similarly included the effects of sediment from the Lower Susquehanna River on the Chesapeake Bay and its living resources. However, they have not included an examination of the impact of the dams on the Lower Susquehanna River during high flow events now that they have all reached near full capacity on sediment transport into the bay. Earlier studies indicated that the dams have historically acted as sediment and associated nutrient traps, thus reducing the amount of sediments and nutrients reaching the bay. As of 1990, it was estimated that 280 million tons of sediment originating from the Susquehanna River watershed were trapped behind the dams located on the lower sections of the river. This assessment started in the fall of 2011. At that time, there was concern that as the dams fill and reach a steady state, they will no longer be able to trap sediments and associated nutrients transported by the Susquehanna River to the upper Chesapeake Bay. This would have a negative effect on the health of the Chesapeake Bay ecosystem. As the moderator mentioned, the intent of the Lower Susquehanna River Watershed Assessment Report was to analyze the movement of sediment and associated nutrient loads within the Lower Susquehanna watershed, which includes the reservoir at the Conowingo Dam and their impact to the upper Chesapeake Bay during high flow or storm events. Specifically, the study area consists of the Lower Susquehanna River watershed from Sunbury, Pennsylvania, to the confluence of the Chesapeake Bay and includes the Holtwood, Safe Harbor, and Conowingo hydroelectric dams located on the Lower Susquehanna River. Much of the modeling efforts in the LSRWA were focused on the Conowingo Dam, as this is the largest dam and reservoir closest to the Chesapeake Bay and was understood to have remaining capacity left to trap sediment. This study was a collaboration of many partners across the watershed. The LSRWA interagency team of experts is led by federal sponsor, the Corps of Engineers, along with non-federal sponsor, the Maryland Department of the Environment, Maryland Department of Natural Resources, the Susquehanna River Basin Commission, and the Nature Conservancy. The team is also comprised of the Corps' Engineering Research and Development Center, U.S. Geological Survey, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, Chesapeake Bay Program, and the Maryland Geological Survey. Each team member brings a specialized skill set that was critical to fulfilling this assessment. We used the best monitoring and modeling tools available in order to understand the complex relationship between river flow and sediment and ecological resources in the Lower Susquehanna River watershed and Upper Chesapeake Bay. There is one full report for each of the models. The team used mathematical environmental models for evaluating sediment and nutrient dynamics in the Lower Susquehanna River and Chesapeake Bay watershed. The team used these models to simulate sediment and nutrient transport through the watershed and within the estuarine system under various conditions. These models were calibrated based on monitored data of known flow, sediment loads, and nutrient loads from the watershed to the bay. The suite of models was used to determine the ecosystem effects of conditions. Some examples of altered conditions involved varying high flow events by season, and simulating reservoir management actions, such as dredging. We incorporated these models with the Chesapeake Bay Program water quality model used in the development of the Chesapeake Bay Total Maximum Daily Loads, or TMDLs, in December of 2010. The report includes consideration of strategies for sediment management and recommendations for future opportunities, which we will discuss later on the call. The entire draft assessment report underwent multiple peer reviews, including an independent scientific peer review sponsored by the Chesapeake Bay Program Partnership's Scientific and Technical Advisory Committee, or STAC. This committee involved 11 different scientific experts from across the watershed, so it was thoroughly vetted. The STAC review concurred with the draft report conclusions and recommendations. This review, along with the study team response, is included in the report appendices. That sums it up for the overview. I will now turn the call over to Anna Compton from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to speak about the major findings in the study.
Thank you, Bruce. Based on the team's technical work, four major findings emerged that we hope will inform the Chesapeake Bay community in future management decisions. Finding number one, conditions in the Lower Susquehanna reservoir system are different than previously understood. The reservoirs behind the Holtwood, Safe Harbor, and Conowingo dams no longer have the long-term ability to store sediment and associated nutrients. A state of dynamic equilibrium now exists. In the state of dynamic equilibrium, sediment and associated nutrient loads will continue to accumulate in the reservoirs until a large periodic storm event occurs. On average, these high-flow storm events occur every 4 to 5 years, washing away sediment from behind the dams, increasing sediment and associated nutrient loads to the bay. This creates a short-term increase in storage volume in the reservoirs for trapping sediment and associated nutrients. This cycle creates a balance or equilibrium between sediment inflow and outflow over years to decades. Over the past 30 years, due to widespread implementation of regulatory and voluntary nutrient and sediment reduction strategies in the Susquehanna River watershed, nutrient and sediment loads to the lower Susquehanna River are significantly lower than what was delivered in the mid-1980s, ultimately delaying the loss of sediment and associated nutrient trapping capacity behind the dams. Finding number two. The loss of long-term sediment trapping capacity is causing impacts to the health of the Chesapeake Bay ecosystem. Because the reservoirs are in dynamic equilibrium, they are trapping smaller amounts of incoming sediment than they were historically, and during large storms, sending more silt and attached nutrients into the river and to the upper Chesapeake Bay more often. During lower flow periods, the three reservoirs actually act as sediment traps and aid in the health of the bay until the next high-flow storm event occurs. The nutrients that enter the river upstream and attach to particles of sediment are a bigger threat to water quality than sediment alone. The water clarity effects of sediment essentially decline once the particles settle. However, nutrient pollution has a lingering effect that leads to algae blooms and dead zones that have the potential to suffocate and stress aquatic life. The modeling estimates indicate that dissolved oxygen is lowered in the deeper waters of the northern main stem bay as a result of nutrients coming from the lower Susquehanna River during high flow events. The modeling estimates also indicate that impacts to dissolved oxygen are tied to the seasonal timing of a high flow event. For example, a storm during spring or summer has greater adverse impacts to water quality in comparison to high flow events in the fall and winter. Additional nutrient loadings associated with changed conditions in the lower Susquehanna River system may result in not being able to meet the jurisdiction's Chesapeake Bay water quality standards, even with full implementation of the watershed implementation plans by 2025 in some of the bay's deeper northern waters. Finding number three, sources upstream of Conowingo Dam deliver more sediments and nutrients and therefore have more impact on the upper Chesapeake Bay ecosystem than do sediment and associated nutrients from the reservoir behind Conowingo Dam. Upstream sources include runoff from land, floodplain streams, and sediment from behind Holtwood and Safe Harbor Dams. Between 2008 and 2011, this study estimated that 13% of the Susquehanna River sediment load came from the reservoir behind the Conowingo Dam. The remaining 87% originated from the broader watershed. These estimates include loads from Tropical Storm Lee in 2011. High flow events will continue to contribute more sediment and nutrients to the bay from the watershed and impact the health of the bay than sediments and nutrients from behind the dams. The final finding, number four, modeling results indicate that managing sediment through strategies like large-scale dredging, bypassing, and dam operational changes by themselves do not provide sufficient benefits to offset the adverse impacts to upper Chesapeake Bay water quality from the loss of the ability to trap sediment and nutrients in the long term. The LSRWA team identified and evaluated 38 broad-level sediment management strategies. Strategies evaluated in the assessment including reducing sediment inflow upstream of the three reservoirs beyond what is required in the Bay jurisdiction's watershed implementation plans, routing sediment around or through the reservoir storage via dam operation modifications or bypassing, and increasing capacity in the reservoirs through dredging or other methods. Cost ranges and effects to water quality were estimated for management strategies. Sediment removal yields minimal short-lived water quality improvements due to the constant deposition of sediment and associated nutrients that come from the watershed. long term, large volumes of sediment are depositing annually. Therefore, the net removal of sediment out of the reservoirs via dredging is reduced because part of the operation would simply be keeping up with pollution. Additionally, water quality improvements are reduced due to the majority of sediment loads coming from the watershed during these high flow events. Results of this study suggest that management opportunities in the watershed that reduce nutrient delivery to the bay as opposed to sediment only are likely more effective at reducing impacts to water quality, low dissolved oxygen, and aquatic life from high flow events. The assessment produced numerous products that are now available to assist in future watershed planning and management efforts. I will now turn the call back over to Bruce Michael to discuss some of the recommendations highlighted in the report and the path forward.
Thank you, Anna. This assessment indicates that additional nutrient loadings associated with changed conditions in the lower Susquehanna River system may result in not being able to meet jurisdiction's Chesapeake Bay water quality standards, even with full implementation of watershed implementation plans. Fortunately, the Chesapeake Bay total maximum daily load was designed by the Chesapeake Bay Partnership to collect and integrate new information through a planned 2017 midpoint assessment. Recommendations from the report include, number one, before 2017, quantify the full impact on Chesapeake Bay water quality and living resources based on our new understanding that the Conowingo Dam and its reservoir, along with the two other dams in the lower Susquehanna River watershed, are not trapping and storing sediment and associated nutrients in the long term. Two, to that end, over the next 2 years, we are implementing enhanced water quality and sediment monitoring upstream and downstream of Conowingo Dam, including continuous monitors and storm event monitoring that will be used to develop better sediment transport models conducted by the University of Maryland Center of Environmental Science Horn Point Laboratory to help inform the Bay TMDL 2017 midpoint assessment. Three, US EPA and their seven Chesapeake Bay watershed jurisdiction partners should integrate findings from the LSRWA into their ongoing analysis and development of their Phase 3 watershed implementation plans as part of the Chesapeake Bay TMDL 2017 midpoint assessment. Four, develop and implement management options that offset impacts to the upper Chesapeake Bay ecosystem from increased sediment-associated nutrient loads due to changed conditions in the lower Susquehanna River's three dams and reservoirs. And five, commit to enhanced long-term monitoring and analysis of sediment and nutrient processes in the lower Susquehanna River and upper Chesapeake Bay to promote adaptive management into the future. For those wondering about next steps, once the report is final, after the public comment period closes and any relevant changes are made to the assessment, this report will be released and intends to better inform decision makers and stakeholders undertaking efforts to restore the Chesapeake Bay. The report is anticipated for release in the summer of 2015. Thank you. I will now turn the call back over to our moderator so we can then begin the Q&A portion of this call.
Thank you, Bruce. I will now turn the floor over to questions. As a reminder, please state your name and affiliation prior to asking a question, and try to keep it to one question and one follow-up. Please focus questions on the LSRWA draft report. You will be placed in a queue until you are called upon to ask your question.
Just a reminder, if you have a question, dial star 1 to enter the queue. Caller, your line has been unmuted.
Yes, this is Tim Wheeler with the Baltimore Sun. I wonder if you could touch on the cost estimates and projected impacts of dredging the reservoir.
Sure. This is Anna Compton with Procure.
So in our report, we lay out a variety, as I said, sediment strategies. The overall cost ranges that we came up with were roughly $5 to $90 per cubic yard of sediment removed, roughly $15 to $270 million annually for all the strategies considered. For dredging specifically, the cost estimates we lay out range from $48 million to $267 million annually for the removal of roughly 3 million cubic yards of sediment, which is roughly what we estimate to be coming in and depositing behind the dam on an annual basis. And the second part of the question about basically it's kind of like what you'd get for that is we saw very minor temporary improvements to water quality in Chesapeake Bay from even these large amounts of sediment being removed.
And that's just to basically maintain the current capacity?
Correct. We do have one other number. We did an extreme dredging strategy where we removed roughly 25 million tons of sediment, which is roughly back to 1996, and that was about a price tag of $496 million to $2.8 billion to dredge back to 1996 capacity.
Thank you.
This is Joel McCord at WYPR. I heard a lot of scientific jargon. Can we try for some English here? Basically, what you're saying is that it's just not worth the effort to dredge or the cost to dredge this, and you'd be better off doing some sediment and nutrient mitigation work upstream. Is that basically what you're saying here?
Sure. This is Anna Compton from the Corps again. I think that's a fair way to summarize it. I think basically what we're trying to say, perhaps in a simpler way, is that we didn't, even when we removed and simulated really large amounts of sediment alone, we simply didn't see any long-term lasting water quality improvements in Chesapeake Bay. And also one of our other findings about the nutrients really playing a bigger role in the water quality impacts, so we're suggesting that it's likely more effective at focusing on nutrient-only management solutions from moving forward.
And how does that affect folks downstream, on the Eastern Shore, for example? Do they still need to do the work that they've been required to do?
Yes, this is Bruce Michael from Maryland Department of Natural Resources. And, yes, we determined that really the impacts to most of the Chesapeake Bay are very limited from the Conowingo Dam. Most of the tributaries and all are really not impacted from the sediments and nutrients. So we certainly would expect that the local jurisdictions would continue to have to implement their watershed implementation plans to see the local responses in their tributaries and streams and rivers.
Thanks.
Caller, you've been unmuted.
This is Jonathan Wilson from WAMU Radio. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Sorry. Just wanted to ask in terms of do we know how much, in terms of quantifying on these large storm events, how much sediment is being washed over the dam or through the dam? I'm not sure how that works. And do those large storm events that wash sediments over the dam also increase nutrient loads that are going into the bay?
Sure. This is Anna Compton with the Corps. So to give you an example of specific loads, we have Tropical Storm Lee numbers, which is the most recent really large storm or scouring event. So what our work estimates is that 3 million tons of sediment were scoured during that storm, specifically from behind Conowingo Reservoir. The remaining of the total 14.5 million tons came in from the remaining part of the watershed. And so absolutely, during these large storm events, stored nutrients along with the sediments from behind the dam are scoured entering Chesapeake Bay, but there's also a large amount of nutrients coming in from the watershed.
I guess my follow-up, in terms of the history of Conowingo, was any of this anticipated in terms of the amount of sediments that would be trapped against the dam back when this dam was first built?
It's Michael from DNR. And, yes, we realized that all dams basically trap sediment, and basically they act as a BMP. But that was not the primary reason for building the dam. The dam was built as a hydroelectric facility, so I don't think that that was one of their major concerns when the dam was first constructed.
Thank you.
And again, the amount of sediment behind the dam really doesn't impact the hydroelectric facility. The water that comes through that is used to generate the electricity is not impacted by the sediment behind the dam.
And at the moment, we have no more new questions. Caller, you have been unmuted.
Yes, thank you. I have a question specifically to Anna. I wanted her to go over the cost again from the question earlier because I think I missed part of it. And also, if the sediment load behind the dam really hasn't been a problem, or you've analyzed it and found that it hasn't been a problem, as much of a problem as previously thought. I mean, this has been true for some time, and so why are we just determining that now?
So this is on a consultant with the Corps. The first part of your question, it sounded like, was just to restate the cost, which I can do. So through all the strategies that we looked at, sediment management strategies, it was roughly $5 to $90 per cubic yard of sediment removed. Roughly 3 million cubic yards of sediment removed annually, roughly what's coming in and being stored, so keeping up with what's coming in, we estimate to be $15 to $270 million annually. For the dredging specific strategies, the costs were $16 to $89 per cubic yard, or $48 to $267 million annually. And the second part of your question, I think, was about perhaps our understanding of the proportion. Could you repeat that second question again? I just want to make sure I get it right.
Yes. I mean, given all the things I've heard before about the problem of having so much sediment behind a dam, it's kind of odd hearing now that it's really not that great a problem, that there are other issues regarding the nutrient load from upstream. And so, you know, I think that many of us have written stories about how problematic this load of sediment is behind the dam, and we're being told now that it's really not the great problem nutrient load is, and so this is something that we shouldn't worry so much about.
Yeah, I mean, this is Anna Compton. I can start off. I think fundamentally when we went into the study, this was one of the big questions we were looking to answer was we had heard this could be a big problem. You see the sediment plumes. You see these large scouring events. So what we tried to do was look at it from a watershed context to try to bracket what is the problem here. And that was part of what our findings and what we're trying to communicate now. And so what we found is, yes, there are loads from Conowingo Reservoir specifically during these storm events, but what we're finding is it's really the nutrients that are the bigger problem than the sediment, and it's also when these storm events occur, Conowingo is one source of load, but it's also we've got all these inputs from the watershed. And so we're hoping through the study, and what we found was that it carries the ball a little bit further as far as understanding and bracketing what the problem is, because before then we simply didn't have a good understanding in the context of the watershed how large or how small the problem is. So that's what we were trying to answer.
Right, and this is Bruce Michael, and one of the larger issues was, you know, how does this actually impact our water quality standards? And the original assumptions were that, you know, sediment would potentially be a large issue, especially when you saw the satellite imagery of Tropical Storm Lee and that huge sediment plume that came down the Chesapeake Bay. Well, two things associated with that, you know, these sediment plumes come down all of our tributaries during all the large storm events we have. It's not just the Conowingo. And secondly, that sediment actually falls out of the water column, and even though there is a short-term impact with the sediment as it moves downstream, it falls out fairly quickly. But it's the nutrients associated with it that have a longer-term impact on us meeting our dissolved oxygen water quality standards in some of the deeper waters in the main stem of the bay. And so those are the things that basically the modeling work and the analysis that we determined through this study. And the results from the study will help inform the 2017 midpoint assessment. That's just one of the things that we will be looking at is the impacts of Conowingo Dam with the new knowledge that we have from the models and also the new monitoring information. But we're going to be looking at better land use information, better BMP efficiency information. All of that needs to be taken into account when we do the midpoint assessment.
Tim Wheeler with the Baltimore Sun again. You're not actually saying that these big storm events in the scour aren't causing water quality impacts, are you? What percentage again of the overall bay is actually impacted by those? And the sort of follow up question would be if you know nutrient reductions upstream would be more beneficial. Are there cost estimates on what more could be done beyond the current WIP plans for upriver?
This is Bruce Michael again from Maryland Department of Natural Resources, and you know, we certainly aren't saying that there is not an impact to our water quality standards. There is an impact, and if we do not do anything to mitigate the nutrients and sediment behind Conowingo Dam, we will not meet our water quality standards by the year 2025 with full implementations on the WIPs. We will still fail the water quality standards in three Chesapeake Bay segments. They are main stem segments CB4, the lower Eastern Bay, and the lower Chester River mesohaline sections. And it's the deep water, deep channel where we normally see low dissolved oxygen. So we certainly have to address it. We have to assess this, and it has to be part of this midpoint assessment to see how we're going to actually meet all of our water quality standards in every one of the 92 Chesapeake Bay segments. As far as cost estimates, this is one of the things that we're going to be working through with the midpoint assessment, is to get a better handle with increased monitoring in that lower Susquehanna River segment and the upper bay, exactly what the amount of the impact is with this associated Conowingo Dam reaching full capacity.
Caller, you've been unmuted.
This is Joe McCord at WIPR. I've just completely lost track of my question. Oh, now I've got it. The report from Maryland Public Policy Institute that came out about a week or two ago says that all this work on the Eastern Shore is worthless, or on the Eastern Shore throughout Maryland's watershed is worthless, if you don't dredge behind Chesapeake Bay. How do you respond to that? Or behind Conowingo Dam?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, this is Anna Compton from the Corps again. I think the best that we can do is speak to the findings that we have from our study. The modeling tools that we used allowed us to compare, and one of the things we were able to compare is WIPs, implementing the WIPs to not implementing the WIPs. And what we found is if none of the WIPs are implemented, roughly half the deep water habitat in Chesapeake Bay will not meet water quality standards. And as Bruce said just a few minutes ago, when you look specifically at scour from Conowingo Dam, it's roughly 3 segments in the upper bay. So just comparing that and saying you can look at these numbers and see that the implementation of the WIP is very critical to meeting those water quality standards. Not that the Conowingo scour is not important, it doesn't have impacts. It's just the relative impacts compared to the WIP, it's a lot larger.
Okay, thanks.
This is Jonathan Wills. Hello?
Hello, we can hear you.
Hi, this is Jonathan Wilson with WAMU again. I apologize if we're kind of, asking the same question again, but I wanted to see if you could clarify. It sounds like maybe we don't know the answer to this question yet. Do we know, you said that when sediment rushes over, you see the satellite images. They're a little bit misleading because this happens with every river in the watershed. But do we have any sense of the numbers of if Conowingo is worse than other rivers when there is a big storm event, or is that something that you're saying that we still need to study?
This is Bruce Michael again from DNR, and every storm is different. Obviously, the impact to the Chesapeake Bay depends on the timing of the storm, the location of the storm, and the magnitude of the storm. When you have one that is dominated in the western shore, our tributaries such as the Potomac, the Patuxent, Rappahannock, York, and the James River, they provide the majority of the nutrients and sediment. If the storm is on the eastern shore, it could be the chop tank that would be more of a problem. And if it's in the Susquehanna River watershed, those are the times that's a location that has the biggest impact on the Susquehanna River and Conowingo Dam. One of the things that we looked at specifically is the timing of these storms. A storm like Tropical Storm Lee that came in September, the impacts are less to the Chesapeake Bay because it's the fall, our SAV are basically dying back, the biological activity is less in the wintertime when the temperatures are colder. A storm that happens like Hurricane Agnes 1972 during June was catastrophic to the bay, first because of the magnitude, but also the timing of the storm. So we did look at this report. We did look at the different seasons when the storms occurred and their magnitudes and where they occurred.
Hi, this is Daryl Fears with the Post again. Bruce, I just wanted to clarify something you said earlier, and that is that you realize that the sediment behind the dam doesn't have as big an impact as previously thought, but it does have some impact. And I just want to make sure I understand you correctly. You said that because it does have that impact, WIPs will not be successful, or you won't be able to meet the goals just by nutrient management alone. And so that leads me to ask, how much mitigation then is needed? You don't need a bigger percent of mitigation behind the dams as previously thought, but does this analysis include any idea of how much money needs to be spent on dredging behind that dam?
We haven't specifically looked at additional information or additional BMPs that would have to be implemented to look at the increased nutrient load reduction. That's something that we need to take into account with the midpoint assessment. When we look at all the factors that contribute to bay water quality, improved land use information, the BMP efficiency,
BMP efficiencies, as well as the impacts from Conowingo Dam. We're going to be doing that through the midpoint assessment over the next several years. And any new information that we collect from our enhanced monitoring behind the dam will actually inform this process as well over the next 2 years.
Hi, this is Danny Thompson, VoIP Capital News Service in Annapolis. I am just wondering if you have any idea who would be paying for these management strategies and recommendations that you're mentioning. State, federal, is it the Exelon company? Who is it?
This is Bruce Michael again. As far as the enhanced monitoring, Exelon has agreed to fund enhanced monitoring behind Conowingo Dam and Conowingo Pool, as well as downstream in the Upper Chesapeake Bay. We're going to be doing this over the next 2 years with in partnership with U.S. Geological Survey, state agencies, and Exelon to collect the information that is necessary. As far as the midpoint assessment, where all this information will be used to inform, the partners agreed when we did the Bay TMDL in 2010 that we would all work towards this midpoint assessment. So all the states, the scientists, academic institutions that worked to develop the TMDL are now going back and reevaluating the TMDL with new information. Yeah, right. The states continue to the funding for the watershed implementations happens through federal agencies, state agencies, local governments. All of them are responsible for implementing the watershed implementation plans.
This is Matt Rowe from the Department of Environment. It's probably also fair to say that, you know, when we get to that quantity that that Conowingo is responsible for contributing to the bay, it would be reasonable to expect that Exelon, you know, help address that quantity of sediment. So, if that wasn't clear.
And at this moment, we have no new questions.
Kim Wheeler, when you say that the scour behind Conowingo would prevent meeting water quality standards in the upper bay, those three segments at the top of the bay, how far off will the goal be? I mean, how badly did filling up of the Conowingo Reservoir affect the overall assessments of the ability of the WIPs to meet the Bay TMDL?
Right. This is Bruce Michael from DNR again. And again, it depends on the exact timing of the event, the magnitude of the event, but it's anywhere from 1% or greater, depending on which particular segment. Out of those three segments, the segment CB4, Eastern Bay, and the Chester River mesohaline sections, anywhere from 1 to 6%, I believe, is the numbers that we had looked at. But again, every storm is different, and it's hard to put an exact number on it. But it is a range of 1 to 6% that we saw that would not meet its dissolved oxygen criteria in the deep water of those and deep channel of those segments.
And is the primary problem here nitrogen or phosphorus or both?
It's both the nutrient inputs from both of those. Yeah, both nitrogen and phosphorus contribute to the dissolved oxygen standards.
This is Anna Conjure with the Corps. Just to add real quick to what Bruce was saying, that 1% non-attainment was the winter and fall events. When we estimated the spring events, which we saw the worst impacts, it was upwards to about 6% off the water quality standards, just to give a sense of the, how the timing really does impact the water quality standards.
So otherwise, during, you know, between those major storm events, the WIPs still would achieve the TMDL?
Sorry, repeat the question.
During the, you know, between major storm events, would there, you know, between these storm events that happen every 4 to 5 years, would the bay still meet its water quality standards if the TMDL was fully implemented?
This is out of concert with the Corps. That's correct. Based on the work that we did, absent a large storm event, we saw full attainment with implementation.
Tim, this is Rich Patuk with the EPA. Just to add on to Anna's, one of the things that, that the follow-up work that Bruce described there is we want to look at some of the smaller events that happen several times a year. The large major ones, certainly with big hurricanes, that was the focus of the core study. One of the things we're finding with some of the work that the modelers did on our USGS colleagues, we're increasingly that we're also seeing scour happen at smaller events that happen several times a year. So right now we can't say, you know, unqualified that if you don't have a major event for a particular year that the Conowingo is not contributing to water quality standards. That's one of the things that the follow-up work that Bruce is describing over the next 2 years and us turning from the findings from this lower Susquehanna towards understanding the effect of those smaller events. Again, ones that happen 2 to 3 times a year and perhaps even more so into the future as we continue to see the effects of climate change. So still a clear answer needs to come out so we can understand the full effect of Conowingo on the states meeting their water quality standards.
And I'm sorry, who was the reporter asking those questions?
Tim Wheeler.
Okay, thank you.
And at the moment, we have no new callers. You have been unmuted, caller.
Danny Thompson from Capital News Service again. I guess I'm just wondering, out of all of your findings, was there anything that really surprised any of you?
This is Anna Thompson with the Corps. I can start off. I think our expectation, especially when we removed a lot, when we went into this, when we ran the modeling simulations looking at removing a really large amount of sediment, we fully expected to see water quality improvements in Chesapeake Bay, and we were surprised. We simply just didn't see it. And so that was one of the, and also, and again, it goes back to that nutrient part of the story, that when we started this 3 years ago, that just wasn't, we just were not aware of that nutrient story and how impactful they were, and so that removing as large volumes of sediment simply just didn't do the job with water quality. So that was surprising to us.
Michael, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily surprising, but again, as Anna said, that you know, the nutrients are more the driving factor in this, and it's not necessarily the sediments alone. And so further reductions in nutrients will have a larger impact on meeting our water quality standards. During these storm events, and I think that, you know, when we saw the satellite imagery from the plume events, you know, it looks very catastrophic, and you think, oh, my goodness, you know, this has got to be, you know, impacting in the bay. And it does. There are, you know, short-term impacts, but that sediment falls out pretty quickly. But we see those sediment plumes in all of our tributaries during storm events, and so this is not unusual. And the bay is very resilient. The bay is getting better. We have lots of examples where we've seen improvement, where we've seen better water quality. We've seen a resurgence of SAV. One of the things that the study from the Tropical Storm Lee, there was certainly devastation in our SAV, especially in the Susquehanna Flats downstream, but the SAV had actually met its water quality criteria back in 2010. Susquehanna Flats was the largest contiguous SAV bed in the Chesapeake Bay at that time.
But the sheer magnitude of the force of Tropical Storm Lee, the water actually ripped the plants up. It wasn't really the sediment that had the major impact. It was more the force of the water coming down and ripping up the plants. But the Susquehanna Flats are, you know, even though it took a big hit, they're still there. The plants are coming back, and the SAV bed is responding now that we haven't had any of these large major events.
Danny, this is Mark Breyer, Major Conservancy. One of the things that I think surprised the team as well, part of what we did was looking at around the world to see whether there were other dams and other hydropower situations that we could learn from. And, in fact, I think what we found was that this is a pretty unique situation globally. There's a lot of hydropower dams. There's a lot of issues around sediment. But nowhere else could we find this kind of impact on water quality as it affects an estuary, for example. So that was surprising to us.
And Matt Rowe from the Department of Environment, an interesting thing to me was the time of year, how the storms at the different time of year can have a different impact. I didn't really, you know, you didn't really think about that going into the study, but the fact Agnes was a really large storm, and that was certainly part of the impact. We also think that the time of year that it happened during the spring and when the SAV beds are starting to take off and it's kind of a critical period for the aquatic resources in the bay, that also that time of year that the storm comes can have a much larger impact on water quality. So we didn't see as much of the impact in a fall or winter storm like we would expect to see in a spring storm. So I think that was something that jumped out in the study that every storm is different. Some storms like the 1996 storm, there's much nutrients, snow, a winter event, kind of just a different kind of event. So each storm is unique, and you kind of have to look at that, not only the time of the year, but the hydrology associated with that. That created some complications in the study, and I think and some of the need for additional study to better understand storm impacts.
Thank you.
And at the moment, we have no new questions. Just a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1 to enter the queue.
Yes, Tim Wheeler, again. I wonder if you could provide for us the sort of the cost figures on what this study costs. And you mentioned, I guess, that Exelon would be funding long water quality monitoring above and below the Conowingo Dam. Could you give a figure on what that commitment is?
This is Anna Compton with the Corps. I can speak to what this study costs. I think Bruce can speak a little better to the future studies and what they're going to cost. This particular study was roughly a two-year study, 1 year of review, roughly $1.4 million split amongst the agencies mentioned.
And this is Bruce Michael from DNR. And, yes, we're estimating that the cost of the enhanced monitoring over the next 2 years, which is very intensive storm event monitoring, as well as continuous monitoring, will be about $3.5 million. Excuse me. And Exelon has agreed to fund that enhanced monitoring.
Completely.
Correct.
And last question, of course, the Conowingo Dam is up for relicensing and was just granted, I guess, a one-year extension. Was that extension in part because of these unresolved issues over the sediment impacts and who would deal with them?
Because the Maryland Department of Environment has till the end of January to make a decision on the water quality certification. So this study will certainly factor into that decision making. There's going to be a public process associated with the water quality certification and a public hearing associated with that as well that's going to happen here probably in the next few days. But the study findings will factor into that. And, again, I think what you're talking about with the one-year extension was on FERC's end. There's kind of the FERC has a role in relicensing as well as the state of Maryland, so they're kind of two separate but parallel processes.
Hmm.
Tim, this is Mark Breyer with the Nature Conservancy. That those extensions, if permits have not been secured, there's sort of a one-year extension that typically is granted by both FERC and the State Water Quality Agency to continue for another year to see if it's resolved, and those continue until the resolutions have occurred. And the issue around water quality and sediment is one of many involved in the licensing process.
And I should clarify, I think I said the end of the year, so the end of January, the state has to make a decision on the certification.
Okay, thanks.
All right, now at this time we have no new questions.
Yeah, this is Bruce Michael again, and I just wanted to clarify on that $3.5 million for the enhanced monitoring on the lower Susquehanna and the upper Chesapeake Bay. We spend tens of millions of dollars a year on monitoring the bay between Maryland and Virginia, doing all the tributaries and the Chesapeake Bay. That's not an extraordinary amount of money. It is a lot of money, obviously, and we're committed to getting the best information available to help guide and inform the process for the 2017 midpoint assessment.
Yep. This is Anna Compton with the Corps, and just if there's no further questions, I was just going to broadly recap our major findings for the group. So basically, our findings are that the reservoirs are each in a state of what we term dynamic equilibrium, so there's no more long-term trapping capacity of these reservoirs. And that state is causing impacts to the health of Chesapeake Bay. Primarily, those impacts are caused by the nutrients associated with those sediments, not the sediments alone. Additionally, the sources upstream of Conowingo Dam deliver more sediments and associated nutrients than the reservoir itself. And finally, the results of this study suggest that management opportunities in the watershed focused on nutrients versus sediment alone are likely more effective at improving water quality long term in Chesapeake Bay.
Yeah, this is Bruce Michael again, and I'll give an update on what those recommendations were. Again, we need to, before 2017, quantify the full impact on the Chesapeake Bay water quality and living resources based on our new understanding of the Conowingo Dam, and this will include the enhanced monitoring and modeling work that is being done and funded. Two, over the next 2 years, we will be implementing this enhanced water quality and monitoring downstream of Conowingo Dam and in Conowingo Pool. Number three, that the EPA and the seven Chesapeake Bay watershed jurisdiction partners were going to integrate the findings of the report and the analysis into our Phase 3 watershed implementation plans and as part of the 2017 midpoint assessment. And four, to develop and implement management options to offset those impacts to the upper Chesapeake Bay ecosystem from increased sediment and associated nutrient loads. And then finally, five, to commit to this long-term monitoring and analysis of sediment and nutrient processes in the lower Susquehanna River and upper Chesapeake Bay to promote adaptive management into the future.
Are there any more questions in the queue?
Not at this time.
Okay. Well, thank you for attending today's call. As a reminder, to receive the embargo press release, please send an email to sarah.d.grossus@usace.army.mil. The report and all associated materials are embargoed until 11 a.m. tomorrow, November 13th. A public meeting and webinar will be held December 9th at Hartford Community College in Bel Air, Maryland from 7 to 9 p.m. And thanks for your interest in restoring the Chesapeake Bay. That concludes today's call.